Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chelsea Echo. Welcome to your match preview of Everton away, a game which nobody really likes playing because it's absolutely terrifying. And on the run we're on, this is definitely a banana skin. No Dan this week because he's currently at Disney doing some fantastic things with his missus. And, you know, he'll tell you more about that when he does get back. You know, personally, I think it's amateur hour. So what I've done is I've decided to bring in somebody who I know is reliable. I say that, he never answers his bloody phone, but, you know, I managed to get hold of him somehow. Ladies and gentlemen, Jay McIntosh. Yay! Round of applause from nobody that listens to the podcast.
Wait. Thank you. Yeah, I am quite bad at answering my phone, actually. For someone that's on it quite a lot, I'm weirdly poor at it. But thank you very much for having me, bro. I appreciate you inviting me on this beautiful Friday morning. It's lovely to see your face. You're looking fucking wonderful, might I say.
Thank you very much.
Fabulous, because I've obviously known you for a number of years now, and I can see you're just looking svelte, mate. You're looking great.
I'm feeling it, mate. I'm definitely not feeling extremely hungover after the Shamrock Rovers game.
And can I be the one to say happy birthday?
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, man. It's it's a good day to be me.
It is a good day. How do you find having a birthday so close to Christmas? My younger brother, his birthday is on the 22nd of December, and his has always sort of just been joined together, I guess.
I mean, it's all right. I'm used to it. The one downside I found over recent years is whenever I try and organise a do, even if I'm doing it in September, I still have people who like can't make it or people that forget and drop out. But the people that do come, you know, we always have a good time. So it's that's the one downside I found over recent years. But that also might be because I can be incredibly disorganized, as you very well know.
Well, I think I think with stuff like that, from my experience, I live, 4 hours away from London because my girlfriend and I have chosen to live in the middle of nowhere. And like most of my friends either live in London or Bristol. So I have to travel 4 or 5 hours to get anywhere, or like my girlfriend's having the girls around for New Year's, I'm going down to Bristol, and it's taken her months to get everyone organised because just the travel alone around the period is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Fascinating to a podcast day, this, isn't it?
No, it is. Me and Dan usually have a little chat, a little natter. This is what you want, guys. This, if you want to get your New Year's plans in check, you listen to a podcast with two guys who are awful on their phones and never respond to each other in time. So it's pretty standard. That's what you need to be doing. But as Dan isn't here, we're going to jump straight into it, mate.
Yeah.
We should probably talk about the big news this week first before we go into our usual podcast territory, and that is Mykhailo Mudryk, who apparently just absolutely loves the sesh, loves the sauce. Loves anything which can apparently be injected into him. What were your thoughts when you initially heard that?
I was quite sad, to be fair. I like Mudryk. I think as a person, I like him. He takes a lot of heat, and I'm really genuinely sympathetic to his situation. And I think he's a good footballer. I know he trains incredibly well, and players really rate him in training. It's just the confidence when it comes onto the pitch, which we all know. But the substance in question is meldonium, which is it's a metabolic moderator, essentially. So it can enhance or reduce certain enzymes in your body. And I've read various test trials where groups who have been subject to meldonium and those that haven't, the ones in the group that have been taking it have seen slight rises in testosterone, metabolism, etc., etc. And I know it was it 2015, 16, 17, one of those years, 2016, Maria Sharapova tested positive for it, and that was the sort of breakout case of meldonium. It's actually licensed in Russia and Latvia, but not in the UK, US or Europe. I guess that would be the European Union plus the UK. It's totally feasible that it could be done accidentally. You look at the Onana situation at Manchester United, who was basically given the all clear but had to still see out his ban anyway. It was no malpractice, no intent, but he had to sit out the ban. I know Maria Sharapova, she got a 2-year ban reduced to 15 months. In football, I've seen some arguments and some parts of the sort of Twitter sphere / general conversation in the Chelsea community that football is a skill-based sport, so how does meldonium help things? Well, obviously, it was used initially by Russian soldiers in the 80s in Afghanistan to stimulate them being able to do more activity for longer periods of time. So that is obviously helpful on the football pitch, so would be considered dubious. I know they still got to see the second test result, which You know, if the first one comes up as positive, I imagine the second one's not particularly ideal. What I like to think is that it's completely accidental because, you know, it's not like Mudryk needs his confidence smashed anymore. But that's kind of my general thoughts. What did you think?
I do feel sorry for him as well, but I am very much in the vein of if you don't laugh, you'll cry. So I have been kind of semi-enjoying some of the Grok AI images that have been coming out on Twitter over the past few days, and definitely haven't made any myself of maybe Mudryk, Paul Popper and Lance Armstrong in a dark alley buying drugs off each other.
Do you know what? There's something also, I mean, I hope no listener's offended by this, but there's something extremely sort of... do you know what? I don't even know how to say this. It's just something so Mudryk about a guy who... He's just a bit close to the bone. He offers people 10k to beat him in a 1v1 in the street because they're messaging him abuse on Instagram. He's on the sesh. Like, he's just loves Jesus, always in the gym. Like, he's just he's a complex guy. He's just complex in there. There's a lot going on.
I reckon he's about two tattoos away from having a massive back piece that says only God can judge me.
100%. 100%, but I kind of rate that he's on that.
Well, and to be honest, mate, just so you know, if you're worried about people getting offended, listen to this podcast, they're listening to the wrong podcast, that you should know by now that if there's anything with me on it, someone is going to get offended. It's fine. It doesn't matter. If you and that's why people are here listening to the fastest growing chess podcast on the planet. But yeah, with Mikhailo Mudryk, it's very much a case of, like, he's... So I'm just trying to get through my head. I've got the FIFA Street 2 sort of setting in my head of him trying to, like, go through somebody's legs and just failing miserably in a panner. He was a player who was touted for big things. I think it all came too much and too fast too quickly. And he's kind of paying for the consequences of it now.
I wonder, actually, whether those at the club, and this is slightly conspiratorial, so forgive me, but I wonder whether some people in the sort of darkened areas of the club that are conducting moves in the shadows, like, if you look at Estevao and Paez coming in and the need to probably move on a couple of wingers or so, I think this sort of dark cloud probably makes it more of an accessible idea to maybe get rid of Mudryk over the next year. I think we'll lose another one of the wingers for Estevao coming in, I don't know who. Obviously, Mudryk's not playing too much. Sancho's kind of holding down the left wing for now. I think he's been really impressive. Neto, Madueke seems sort of ripe in it. Sterling obviously won't play for Chelsea again, I don't think. Move Mudryk on, Estevao comes in and sort of sits secondary to Sancho or to Madueke or to Neto, whoever, and have those four. I think that could be seen by the club as, okay, let's move Mudryk on quietly and there's a more legitimate reason to seek solutions elsewhere. Although, interestingly, on the pod I do with Sai, we had a load of people in the comments saying, oh, it could be Russian interference, this is stuff that Russia would do, rah, rah. And I was like, I just was thinking, oh, goodness me, it's going to be such a conspiracy theory. But the worst part is, I sat there and thought about it, and it kind of is something that the Russians would do in a roundabout way. So who knows what to think.
Have you heard as well, that was really funny at the Shamrock Rovers game yesterday. There was people around me, and my mate said to me as a joke, but then people are just like talking about it around us, where people are trying to say that I think Tari George might have spiked Mudryk to get his place in the squad. So it's a bit like, geez, like the conspiracy theories are there. I love a good football conspiracy theory. I just love conspiracy theories, full stop. We could talk about, you know, jet fuel and steel beams, but I feel that's just really played out now and a bit boring.
I think as well, it's interesting with something like this, where if it were a player of first team significance or future potential significance, we would all have a completely different reaction to this. But because it's Mudryk, and I think the seriousness around him has generally not been there, I don't think anyone really cares that much. I think it would be preferable to not have negative stories around the team, but Mudryk actually has little impact on the first team and has done well in the Europa Conference League, but it's not like his output's irreplaceable. It's completely replaceable. And that's a real shame for a player who I liked and rated and kind of wished succeeded. But the seriousness isn't there. And I don't think anyone in the fan base is really that bothered, hurt, upset, worried for the future. I think it's a story that will continue to grow, but I don't imagine it will affect the team or the fan base as much as other fan bases and other interests might want to talk about it.
Yeah. Mine's just the financial outlay and how Clear Lake approach this, because obviously this is one of the first examples or big examples they had of their amortization.
Yeah.
So how is that going to play out? Because if Chelsea do cancel his contract, and when I was looking at early doors, I thought this surely might come under force majeure. I mean, I'm going to have to ask a lawyer because I don't know. But it's a case of like, how could Chelsea know that he was going to do that? How, and he apparently didn't know that was going to happen. It's just happened. And then obviously Shakhtar Donetsk need the fees, but then Chelsea are paying that over a longer period. So how's that going to work if the contract gets cancelled? How does that affect Chelsea's finances going forward as well? Does it mean they're maybe going to adapt how they deal with things? There's a whole fallout from it, which I'm quite intrigued to see how it happens and plays out more than anything. But I'm with you. Like, I really like Mikhailo Mudryk. I really wanted to work for him. Like you said, he's just that lad who just loves his football. Loves going to the gym, doing his thing. Like he seems like a nice bloke. So it's a bit like, well, you know.
And also, mate, when that part of the world needed a hero, it's a real shame that the burden maybe couldn't be bared to the extent that it is. Even though he is outstanding for the national team in terms of a bit more greater influence and representation in the Western sphere. It would have probably been beneficial to a whole nation, and that's probably the pressure he's feeling.
Yeah, and I reckon that's exactly what's happened there. Mm. And, you know, hopefully it all works itself out. And look, if he does end up staying at Chelsea and, you know, have a bit of a renaissance, fantastic. If he does move on, well, you know, best of luck to him whether he goes. But we'll move on now, and we'll move straight into the standardised podcast, because we've done the big news. Dan missed it, you know, too busy riding Space Mountain, you know. Fair play. This is his problem. But this is a game that I play with him, right? And I was on the receiving end last week. As he's not here, you are now on the receiving end. So every week we look back at some of the fixtures with the opposition we're playing, and we have to guess the 11. And with that, it's not the Chelsea 11, it's the opposition 11. So with all that being said... You, Jay, said, I want to do this game because that's be less obvious.
Yeah, but just to be clear to the listeners, I was slightly confused and did not get told I was naming the opposition 11.
Yeah, I know. That's half the fun, mate. But
9
honestly,
years old in this game.
Yeah, so this with the game we have picked, or Jay has picked, was Chelsea 4, Everton 1 in the FA Cup, 8th of February 2006. Chelsea, I did a pretty decent job. David Moyes was the manager at that point in time, and Jose was not given the press conference according to the BBC, which suggests he was either banned or he just didn't feel like it, and Steve Clarke was talking in that game. So Phil Dowd was a referee, an attendance of 39,300. I'll give you the players that scored for Chelsea: Iron Robin, Frank Lampard, Hernan Crespo and John Terry.
Sounds so good, doesn't it?
It does. It does. It's so good.
I know Arteta scored for Everton.
He did. Captain Scarlett did indeed score for Everton. Mm. But to be fair, there's a few players here where you'll be like, do you know what? Like, you wouldn't get the whole 11, but there'd be players here where you would kick yourself if you don't get them.
Okay, right. Shall I just throw some out there? Old Everton names that I can remember.
Go on.
Who's the old fish? Who's the guy that loves his fishing, plays in the like third league in France? It's Tony Hibbert.
Tony Hibbert did indeed play.
Okay, right, I'm running out of options. Oh, it was Hibbert and... Oh, the left-back. Oh, mate, I know the left-back. The left-back is Phil Neville.
It was indeed Phil Neville.
Okay, I'm clutching... Now I'm completely stuck. So I don't know whether he went that far back, to be honest with you, but like I say, you and I would have been the same age during this game, basically, 9 years old. So yeah. Someone like... I don't know, Cahill?
Cahill was a new player. You're on a roll. You're not doing too badly.
I'm running really low on old Everton. Like, it's doing my hardest to not say Stephen Pienaar right now. I'm trying very hard to not say Pienaar.
There's a player that played next to Stephen Pienaar who is playing in this game. I'll give you clues.
Played next to Pienaar. Goodness me. I'm trying to make this interesting for listeners as well, as I'm aware that pace is key.
He is...
Tim Howard?
Tim Howard did not play this game. This guy went on... He is bald, though, and did go on to be a pundit for the BBC on Match of the Day.
Leon Osman?
Leon Osman did indeed play.
Is that who you meant?
There's another one who... Yeah, indeed. And there's another one who is also a pundit of the BBC, but they got rid of him because he's really, really boring. Oh, Irish.
Goodness. Irish. Irish football players from 2006. It's not Damien Duff. It's brutal.
I know.
Irish. Okay. Stephen Ireland. It's not going to be Stephen Ireland because I don't think he ever played at Everton. Oh, man.
When you give up, let me know.
It was a pundit.
It was indeed a pundit.
I've got two names, but I'm not sure if they're either of them are Irish. One of them is, did he play for Rangers as well? I feel like he played at Everton for ages, so he's one of the like pool of players that I can potentially point out. I would have said, did Yakubu play there? But I don't think he played there at the time. Naismith, did Naismith play for Everton?
Naismith did play, but he was on the bench today and didn't come on. There's a Scottish player that played for Rangers that also played for Everton. That everyone at that time is a bit of a street sweep forget player.
McFadden?
McFadden did indeed play.
Right, can I have a clue for the striker and I'll give up because I feel like I'm pushing my luck.
Playing for Southampton and Sheffield United as well. Jose Mourinho hated him.
Andy Johnson?
Nope.
James Beattie?
James Beattie did indeed play for Everton that day.
Right, I'm done. I'm absolutely calling a time. My heart hurts, mate, trying to think of players. I was thinking of Aidan McGeady, but I think he only scored once for Everton, about 2013, so it was not him.
He did.
I was thinking so Sylvain Distan.
Nah.
No,
so
Baines.
It's centre-back, so there's one which I think, it's not, you wouldn't kick yourself, but you'd be like, maybe you should have thought of him. We've got, Turner was in goal for Everton that day, no idea who he is.
No idea.
Tony Hibbert at right back, David Weir at centre back with some guy called Ferrari, not the cars. Phil Neville at left back. Nuno Valente apparently played for Everton.
Who is Nuno Valente?
He was replaced by Davies. Arteta, and the one that I think I'm actually quite surprised you didn't get, Kevin Kilbane. Leon Osman. Lee Carsley came on. Cahill, Beattie and McFadden also came on. The unused subs were Wright and Naismith. Three players put that day were...
Nuno Valente won a Champions League at Porto under Mourinho.
Did he?
I've just looked, yeah. I think that's the case, yeah. He won 2004-03-04 Champions League with Porto, yeah.
Well, there you go. That's that. Then we really should know who he is, shouldn't we? You know, you and I have our European football pedigree. But with that being said, do you want to just go through the Chelsea 11 or do you reckon you could have a stab at it?
I reckon
you could have a stab at this.
Yeah, I could probably have a stab. Check.
Nope.
Cudicini.
Cudicini, yeah.
John Terry, because he scored.
Yeah.
Robert Huth.
Yeah.
Lampard.
Yeah.
Who else scored? Robin scored. Crespo scored. 06.
Chelsea's first ever signing of the Abramovich era also played in this game.
Heidegger Johnson?
No.
First ever signing under...
Oh, no. Well, Good Johnson did play, but he wasn't the first ever signing. Apologies.
Oh, man. Who would have played? Joe Cole.
Came on.
This is actually harder than people think. Right, okay. So we've got Cudicini in goal.
Yeah.
Terry, Huth, fullbacks I'm working on. In the midfield, I've got Lampard that I know, Robin, yeah. Crespo, Gudjonsson. So I'm missing a couple. Who would have played alongside Lampard in the midfield at the time, 2006? When did Michael Ballack come? Probably a little bit after Makelele, Essien?
Essien indeed did come into the side. It was Essien that day.
People only listen to this audio, don't they? They don't watch.
Yeah,
they're Louis pulling faces at me and raising eyebrows if I sort of say a name that might be correct. Who played? Robin would have played on the right. Who played? Joko on the left. But he came on. You said he came on. Who played? Who wingers? Wingers. Not Robin, not Joe Cole, not Damien Duff. Who else was a winger at that time? Not Kalou, not Malouda. Sean Wright Phillips?
Is that your answer? You sure?
Did he play?
He did indeed play.
Okay.
Stop looking at me! I've got a rubbish poker face!
I know, yeah, there. I know. Fullbacks. Fullbacks is hard. 2006. Fullbacks. Paulo Ferreira.
It's not hard. No.
Ashley Cole wasn't there at the time, was he?
No. Oh, he was. He was on the bench, I think. No,
Glenn Johnson?
Glenn Johnson didn't play. Now you got one more player.
Left back.
Yeah.
Not Ashley Cole.
Yeah.
William Gallas. I almost said Baba Yara, you know. I almost dropped Baba Yara.
What a man. That would be a bit of Celestine Baba Yara. I think if I get a dog, that's what I'm going to call it. I'm going to call my dog Celestine Baba Yara.
That's a nice name for a dog.
Yeah, I thought about Didier Drogba, but I think that's a little bit too, that's too easy.
I like also, that you're going for the full Celestine Babiaro full name.
Yeah. I was really torn. It was either going to be Celestine Babiaro, Clive, or Stavros. I haven't decided. It's the three.
Well, I think it depends on the dog that you choose.
I was off to Frenchie about 2 months ago. And I thought about it.
You've got a Frenchie on your mind.
It's not. I got this, and then it happened to be offered a Frenchie a few weeks later. But he was called Fudge, and I didn't particularly fancy retraining a dog with the name Fudge. And imagine me walking through a park, going Fudge, oi, Fudge. That doesn't work. No, I'm not doing that.
I think that's a respectable decision. That's a really hard segment of a show, and I've not done anything like that on any show. You and I often frequent Goldberg's live stream at this point, and we don't. That is a really hard challenge to name opposition lineups from teams in the past. That's remarkably tough.
It's fun though, isn't it? Like, because you do think about it, there are some players going, "Oh my god, remember him?" And you already mentioned as we in the next segment of the show, we like to play a game. You've already mentioned a player that likes his fishing in Tony Hibbert, right?
Yes.
Plays in the third division in France against something Andy like Carroll and his Bordeaux side. He's just having a great time as Tony Hibbert. But with that being said, which player in the current Chelsea squad do you think would absolutely love fishing? That isn't Cole Palmer doing a Burberry advert.
That's a great advert as well, actually. I think we're both probably fans of that advert. Which player do I think would enjoy fishing? That is a very unique question that I didn't think I'd ever be asked. Which member of the Chelsea squad would enjoy fishing? Do you know what, honestly? You know, like naughty kids at school, and they have like a limited timetable, and then when they're off their timetable, they can go and do something that's like a little bit of work in a garage, or they can go and do some woodwork, or they can do something that gives them a bit of a break from the stresses of school, and they kind of warm to doing stuff a little bit more. I feel like Jadon Sancho would enjoy some quiet, peaceful fishing time. You know, where he's just not surrounded by people and socials and all the stuff that clouded him at Manchester. I think him going for a 4 or 5 hour little fish somewhere with a couple of friends, just nice and quiet, I think he would very much like that. I think Mudrick would probably like it too, I guess.
Mudrick has been like, Mudrick and Renato Vega have been the default answers every single week, pretty much, because we just feel like they'd be for that.
Sorry to take things off in junky directions, but I'm really rating Renato Vega.
He's good, isn't he?
I just like the look of him. Yeah, I think he looks good, and he's big as well. And yeah, I like him. I think there's a future for him at Chelsea.
There is. Well, I tell you what, we're definitely going to talk about him later, because obviously Cucurella is unavailable for this game against Everton. But that is this section done of the show. Guys, let us know who you think would be fantastic fishermen at Chelsea. And maybe they could make a group, like some Cornish sea shanty singers. Sea shanty?
Sea shanty shingers.
It's a tongue twister. That. Sea shanty singers. Thank you very much. I'm still drunk. But yeah, that's that section of the show done. Guys, we'll hand you over to Tom. The only section of the show that has a jingle. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Stat Shaggers.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Well, it's Christmas time. It's the festive period. And we're ready to go. Conference League sorted. Bosch, 6 wins from 6. Top spot secure. Job very much a good one in that competition. And we go on into the proper festive period with some proper big crunch games. And I don't think there's anything bigger than the first one this weekend on a Sunday, 22nd of December, a classic, seemingly, Chelsea festive fixture, Everton away. Yuck. And why I say yuck will become very clear very shortly. Overall, these two sides have met a whopping 192 times. A lot of games. Chelsea have won 76, which is 40%, 56 draws and 60 wins for Everton. The Toffees have become a very solid team, despite their lowly league position at the moment, which was perhaps best highlighted, I think, last week by their 0-0 draw against Arsenal at the Emirates Stadium. As I said, lowly position. They still sit 16th in the table, and they have only won 3 games all season, but have conceded fewer goals than Manchester City this season, and only 2 more than Chelsea's 19. Of course, if you're sitting in 16th and not conceding many goals, then you must also not be scoring many, and that is certainly the case. 4 of their last 10 matches have ended 0-0, and in those games, they have managed to score only 9 goals in total. Everton did not score a single Premier League goal in November, losing 1-0 to Southampton before back-to-back 0-0 draws with West Ham and Brentford, and a 4-0 trouncing against Manchester United at Old Trafford. However, December is slightly different. They are yet to concede. They beat a hapless Wolves 4-0. And then, of course, drew 0-0 with the Gunners last weekend. Unsurprisingly, based on that, only Southampton, who've scored 11, have scored fewer goals than Everton's 14. Chelsea, of course, won 6-0 the last time these two sides met, but the game was still marred by the infamous penalty incident where Nonny Madueke and Nicholas Jackson fought to get the ball off Cole Palmer. That would, you feel, not be tolerated under Mr. Enzo Maresca. At Goodison Park, though, it is considered a bogey fixture for a reason. Chelsea did manage a 1-0 win there to start the season before last off under Graham Potter, bizarrely. But that was the only win at Goodison Park since April 2017 and Pedro's wonder strike goal in a 3-0 win when Antonio Conte was our manager, of course, before we went on to win the league title. In the last 10 Premier League ties at Goodison Park, Everton have won 6. There's been one draw and Chelsea have won 3. Two of those wins were back in 2014 and 2017, as I just said, though. So it really has not been a happy hunting ground for Chelsea to play in recent years. Let's hope in the final time that Chelsea will play at Goodison Park, it can be a positive experience and we can go into Christmas off the back of a rare win at Goodison Park. Now on to the managers. Enzo, well, I mean, unsurprisingly, has not managed against Everton before, or at least not their senior team, but he does have 2 wins against their under-21, so let's hope he can make that step up into the senior team. Sean Dyche, well, he's played 17 times now against Chelsea and only has 2 wins, one last season for the Toffees in that 2-0 win at Goodison Park, and one in August 2017 when Alvaro Morata's brace off the bench could not prevent a 3-2 loss for Chelsea against Dyche's Burnley. Chelsea do have, however, certainly rule the roost over him, winning 10 and drawing 5 of the remaining 17 fixtures between Dyche and Chelsea. So let's hope we can go one better and make it 11 wins over Sean Dyche teams. Up the Chelsea.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
I like stats. Why do you guys hate stats?
It's just killing the game.
It takes away the beauty. Is that the sort of argument there? It's sort of less beautiful when it's quantified.
Exactly. Yeah. So not, that's normally at this point down to go. Yeah, numbers and just.
Yeah. Fine.
On.
Fuck stats. Let's go.
Well, that's that said. Now we'll move into the actual preview.
Sorry, and I don't know if we're allowed 11. To swear.
Yeah, mate, we're allowed to swear. Don't worry about it. You don't need to panic. It's
cool.
Fine.
Cool.
Fucking pansy. Anyway, right, we'll move swiftly on into the Echo 11. And that is how we set up our previews. So obviously with this, Jay, we go just work our way through the team, what we think it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And then me and Dan usually argue because he's quite realistic about it. And I'm very much there, like, I don't want to be realistic about it.
Yeah.
I want this, but it's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. So in this case, we'll jump straight in with the goalkeeping position where potentially something could change because Robert Sanchez is a booking away from having Boxing Day off. So, with that being said, if you were Enzo Maresca and you were sitting in your bath and you're putting pledge on your head to make it nice and shiny, what would you do in the goalkeeping position? Would you keep Robert Sanchez? Do you think that's something which you're going to have to get used to? Or would Philip Jorgensen be coming in now? Has he done enough for you to start for Chelsea Football Club?
Do you know what's really interesting on Robert Sanchez is, like, for various, like, you know, written pieces or whatever I've been asked to do over the last month or two, goalkeepers has been something that's been really prevalent, and finding potential new goalkeepers for Chelsea has been something I've been asked to do on different things. When you do a sort of statistical analysis, I know that we just said we hate stats, but if you look at the data, Robert Sanchez ranks really well across the metrics for, you know, save percentage, pass completion, everything that we kind of look at. He's sort of a good age profile. He's a good height. I mean, one of the saves he made against Brentford was absolutely outstanding. But it's simply the fact he's got a hospital pass in him that I think causes people a significant amount of stress. Like, because the data is actually positive and his shot stopping's quite good typically. But actually, his concentration is too much of an issue. And I think that another goalkeeper or a goalkeeper of a level above is someone that has sort of more mental clarity than someone like Sanchez. But going back to your shiny pledged head question in the bath, I think Sanchez will play is what I'm inclined to think, because we're playing, is it Ipswich on Boxing Day? Forgive me if I'm wrong.
Fulham.
Fulham.
It's a big derby, that one, mate. Oh,
Yeah, I mean, which team are better? Fulham are better than Everton considerably, aren't they? I don't know, man. I think he'll play Sanchez, to be honest with you. That would be my bet. I think Sanchez will start.
So you're saying, is Philip Jorgensen ever going to get a look in, do you think? Or is he very much secured as the second choice?
I think both, to be honest with you. He does get a look in because he plays in Europe. I would imagine that even in a Conference League final, he would play. But Sanchez is the number one for now, and that's, I think, the way it's going to stay, certainly for this season. And if we move for another number one, Jorgensen might have to sit number two permanently.
Well, let's see what happens with that. I'm intrigued. In terms of the names that you've obviously had to write down, I've really struggled in terms of looking at goalkeepers who I really think would come in and take Chelsea up a level that fit the profile of what the club are looking for. Has anyone stuck out to you then, considering you've had to do a lot of research on it?
Yeah, so there's a few. Marcin Bulka is a really promising keeper, and he used to be at Chelsea. His date is very positive. He's been performing very excellently, and people are rating him highly. I think he's having a very good campaign in goal and has been very promising since he left Chelsea. Chevalier, too, over in Ligue 1, has also been having a sort of breakout season, and certainly someone that, everyone should be considering. Lucas Chevalier plays at Lille, and the one that I mentioned on a podcast last week was Di Gregorio over at Juventus, the Italian goalkeeper on loan from Monza. He's at Juventus from Monza. He's incredible. He's just incredible. He's having an absolute whirlwind season. He's 27. Juventus have been a bit meaty, but he literally, in every data metric, comes basically within the top 5 to 10 goalkeepers in Europe this season. And that's, it's certainly someone I'd look at, especially because you're not buying him from Juve, you're buying him from Monza. And I think when it comes to financial battle, Chelsea can outdo Juventus. Whether Juventus carry more cachet for someone who is Italian, who is our age, so understands the enormity of Juventus, I don't know. And the other one, which is painstakingly obvious and so boring, is, which I've tried to name other keepers, is someone like Oblak, Atletico Madrid. And Atletico probably looking as good as they've ever looked under Simeone at the moment. Everything's clicking. Julian Alvarez is playing well. Griezmann's looking like the best player in Europe, or one of them. And Oblak, again, is having a quietly outstanding season. And he's been around for ages and he's only 31. He's still got so many more years to be playing at a top level, I think. And I know that Chelsea have an under 30 policy generally, or actually a sub 25 policy. But with a goalkeeper, I would go more out there and try and just world class level up, because statistically Sanchez is decent, but I think it's his mentality. He loves to be on camera, and his occasional hospital pass that really let us down. So probably one of those guys I would consider. But that means Jorgensen is perennially second place. But you know, life could be worse than being a second-choice goalkeeper at Chelsea that gets to play in Europe and earns decent wage.
Could be better. You could be Marcus Bettinelli, who's a third-choice goalkeeper.
Facts.
I mean, that is the best job in football, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Surely. Or which in the world. What is your job? I'm a third-choice goalkeeper.
I would like to think,
fuck all,
there's a group chat of third-choice / second-choice goalkeepers in the Premier League. Sort of Bettinelli, who else? Scott Carson.
Oh, you just know that'd be a good night out with those two as well.
Yeah, I think so. You know, there'll be some guys somewhere who are sort of third choice, quite old, but really, really want to stay there for as long as possible. Can't blame them, really.
That'd be great. But yeah, I'm intrigued by some of the names you've mentioned there. I mean, Di Gregorio is a player which I like.
Mm.
I think my only worry is players coming out of Serie A and coming into the Premier League, it sends a little shiver down my spine.
Let me counter that with one example, which is Alisson came from Roma to Liverpool and has been completely sound. I think with a goalkeeper, it's slightly different because the demands of the league aren't always as lived as if you were a midfielder or defender or striker, because you're sort of away from the play. So his shot stopping would be sort of equal depending on where he is. Maybe certain teams take more shots in the league than, you know, Juventus concede not too many shots, but he's looking really, really positive, to be fair. He's just a name that I like and think people should keep an eye on for the next 5 years or so.
He's a solid keeper, to be fair. I'd be intrigued to see how it develops for him. I think, you know, Monza to Juve. He's probably going to go to Juve, if we're going to be very, very honest.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm in a similar vein to you, though, when you're talking about Oblak. I was thinking, well, when Jan Sommer was knocking about because he wanted to leave Bayern. I was like, that was right there. We should have gone for that. But, you know, Celavi, unfortunately, we missed that boat. But we'll move swiftly on into the rest of the team. And we'll move on to left back, because you've already mentioned him, Renato Vega. Obviously, a great player for Chelsea. Really worth his salt currently. And obviously with Marco Correa unavail in this fixture because he had decided to have a Barney with the referee after we'd won the game against Brentford.
Yeah.
What are you thinking of Renato Vega? Because you've already mentioned that you already like him. You think he's got a long-term future at Chelsea?
Yeah, definitely. I don't see why he wouldn't. I think versatility is absolutely key. He's got that. He's big. That helps in the Premier League when a lot of young players aren't quite physically there. He basically is. I think he's done well in the European competitions, although the opposition haven't been great. They've still been putting admirable performances that make us all quite excited together. I think the Conference League's been quite a nice addition to Chelsea fans' lives this year. I think the combination of a lack of injuries and having a European competition that we can see the benefits to the team, the wider team anyway, I think that's really, really positive. With Vega, I mean, it's again statistically difficult to understand things and compare him to other players because obviously he's playing a little bit in the Premier League and actually much more in the Conference League. I think he's got almost 200 Premier League minutes, but nearly 500 Conference League minutes. But when you look at the details, he ranks top 1% for non-penalty goals, passes attempted, passes completed, progressive passes, top 5% for blocks, top 4% for interceptions, top 10% for touches, top 10% for non-expected penalty goals and expected assists, top 1% for shots. Like, he's kind of doing everything. He's a very, very strong passer. He doesn't dribble, ever. He's not a comfortable dribbler, which I think is something he needs to work on. Like, he, in terms of progressing the ball himself, he would rather pass it than dribble. Which actually with a fullback I don't hate because it means you're less prone to being caught out on the break, right? Because you're still where you are because you trust in your pass. Like, he's in the bottom 5% of fullbacks for how far he progressively carries the ball. But he is actually basically really gifted everywhere else. The only thing that's slightly underwhelming with him, and I think it's because I don't actually know why it is, because I was going to say his age, but he's 21, is that given his height, he doesn't win as many headers as you would like. But other than that, I think he's really, really positive. And he will certainly play for Portugal, and I think that will add to what he brings to Chelsea. So I'm perfectly fine with him playing this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, he's a suitable backup. I was saying to Dan, I mean, obviously at the Shamrock Rovers game, again, I know you're saying about the opposition, but his versatility was so important in that game. Played centre-back, he's played left-back, he's played midfield. I think he's popped over to right-back a couple of times as well, maybe in-game, just sort of cover while somebody wasn't available. You know, he's somebody who... I can see a second coming of Dave in him. I really can. So we're going to have to figure out another name for Renato Vega because he can't be called that if he's a second coming of Dave. It needs to be like Clive or Steve, something like that.
Yeah, it's interesting as well because sorry to just wax on because I know we've got to finish a podcast at some point, but there's an essence to this Chelsea team which is about building for the future and the future being now, and you look at the sort of baton passing from old to new or new to old, is I think the age gap between someone like Renato Vega and someone like Cucurella, I think it's a 5 or 6 year age gap. I think it's basically perfect for their careers to be at Chelsea so that when things pass over, we've got something straight away that's different, but experience, been there for a long time. You know, we'll likely develop leadership qualities. We'll have been an international player, blah, 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 blah. Cucurella, I think, is top three left back in Europe at the moment, but Renato Vega is a perfectly suitable understudy, and I think the age gap is really positive and it's not quite so close, whereas like Reece, Gusto, Achimpong maybe if he doesn't play centre back, like it's quite congested there, whereas on the left side, Renato Vega 21, Cucurella 26, 27, I think that's nice.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that develops, and I'm a big fan of both of them at the minute.
Yeah,
Cucurella has definitely found his feet after quite a poor start to life at Chelsea. And you know, I think the pair of them, it's good competition as well. But that's that. I think centre backs is less interesting. I mean, Levi Cole was the first name on the team sheet. Don't really need to go through that. And obviously, the other centre back maybe more interesting. I mean, no Wesley Fofana probably still. So might be looking at Tosin Adebayo, who's apparently been praised quite heavily within the Chelsea camp over the past few weeks, and is apparently displaying captain's qualities, leadership qualities, and just elevates the professionals of all the players. I mean, coming from Fulham, Obviously, I think a lot of people were maybe slightly underwhelmed. Free transfer, Trevor Chalobah, just basically feeling that maybe it was a light for light that wasn't necessary. How do you find Tosin Adebayo?
Yeah, I quite like Tosin, to be fair, mate. I think people were quite critical of him early doors, or certainly people I speak to regularly. But a few people that I know at the club and, you know, occasionally talk to find out bits and pieces are very complimentary about Tosin. Again, I think he's a perfect sort of age profile now, 27, and that really benefits the team. He's spread his minutes basically equally across the league and Europa League, Europa Conference League. He's quite a high earner, but you know, I think he's doing quite well and is bedding into the team nicely. I see Maresca bedding in players a little bit the way Klopp did, where it takes time for them to become a presence in the first team. Again, hard because Fofana and Colwell's kind of our future Saliba, Gabriel. I know players, people hate that, but that's kind of the thing we're aiming for. But I think Tosin's clearly better than De Sassi and Badiashile. Unfortunately, I specifically had hopes of Badiashile, but I just don't think he looks that good anymore at Chelsea. So I think Tosin looks better. He's obviously, his size really, really helps. We need that height, especially against a team like Everton. Like, Tosin's 6'5", and it's going to be absolutely vital. Like, he wins 85% of his aerial duels, basically. He's really, really good at it. And actually, what's quite surprising with Tosin is he puts up quite high numbers for shots and touches in the attacking box. So when, you know, went from corners, etc., he just finds that he's quite a magnet to the ball in the box. And I think that's going to be really helpful. So I like him. I think it's positive. Probably decent for Levi to be there. I'm not rating Everton that highly, so I think Tosin should be able to quite comfortably deal with it. He's dealt with it plenty of times at other teams before as well, so it should be fine.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about their, obviously Everton have got the most clean sheets in the league currently.
Yeah.
So they're looking quite resolute defensively, but I feel like we could break that down potentially given how well we've played recently. But, you know, we'll have to see what happens with that. But I mean, all these stats, mate, what is this? This is not the show. All these numbers.
Sorry.
Giving people information that's really helpful to a conversation. What is wrong with you?
I'm sorry, guys. Bloody woke nonsense, this, isn't it?
It is. It's complete woke nonsense. I'm going to stand in front of that green wall today and take a picture just for you, just to prove a point. But in terms of the rest of the team, Malo Gusta right back, probably the most obvious. Enzo Fernandez, Moises Caicedo, Cole Palmer, probably the three in midfield. Mm. Romeo Lavia maybe still carrying a slight knock. Mm. How do you feel about that midfield? Do you feel that you've talked about congestion in some places in the team?
Yeah,
and it's a very light argument because we went on to win the game, but maybe there is an argument that when Romeo Lavia has been fit, you've had Lavia, Fernandez, you've had Moise Caicedo inverting into that central midfield position with them, but
yeah,
when we're defending, he has maybe been caught out a little bit, especially against Spurs, as an example, by Heung-min Son, when he's had to defend. Do you feel that there is maybe a case that this is a slightly congested midfield, or do you think that there is going to be a way that this is going to work?
I think there's a way that it certainly works, to be honest with you. I think it can be pretty easy to manage it quite nicely, to be honest with you. Like Lavia, you came in for a big price, but you're 19, you've had an injury, so you can be patient and come in when you can. Actually, he's unbelievable. He's so good. He is press resistant beyond belief. I think Lavia will be central to what Chelsea do over time. Caicedo is the sort of inverting right back. I actually quite like it. I think this season, Caicedo has been the best midfielder in the Premier League. And
I agree with that.
I would say he's probably the first name on the team sheet. Probably. It's like Cole, him, Kukurea and Levi, I think, are the ones that are always on. Jackson maybe too, but I think players like Andre Santos coming back will definitely get a chance. Ugochukwu, unfortunately, will go. Kean and Dewsbury Hall, no one really minds because it's who cares whether he sits on the bench for ages and plays peripheral minutes. Maybe him, but he came to Chelsea from Leicester, so what do you expect? Like, doesn't really affect the fans, you know. And actually, I know a lot of noise was made about Gallagher going and Dewsbury Hall coming in and that being one of the worst transfers ever, but what you get with Kiernan that you don't get with Connor is someone that's more okay to hold a bench position. And then that makes a headache slightly less impactful and you can balance things a little bit easier. Whereas obviously Connor would want to play in the first team, maybe rightly so. Kiernan doesn't do that. So I think the midfield would be is not overly congested and I think it should be okay. And currently Enzo, Caicedo, Palmer are like the three most informed midfielders, if you want to class Palmer as a midfielder, in the league, give or take. I mean, Enzo got 10 goals and assists in 7 games. Caicedo is, I know, for fear of easy comparisons, is looking like N'Golo Kante, and Cole Palmer's unstoppable. So I'm pretty happy with it. Again, I don't think Everton's midfield is particularly impressive. I'm really not hot on Everton. I think it's going to be a tricky game, but I think their squad stinks, and I hate watching Sean Dyche teams play football, to be fair. It's one of the worst footballing entertainment spectacles you can see. I respect him, but it's a dreadful watch.
And you watch a Serie A, mate.
I do watch Serie A. Yeah, I do. Yeah. That's a great point. Yeah, it's a great point. I think, you know, because it's Italian, it's different, it's sexy, and the food's nice, and everyone's got lovely hair, I can get on board of it a bit more. Whereas watching 11 blokes from, you know, the arse end of Liverpool resolutely defend, it's tough, man. It's tough.
Oh, mate, it's one of those where I agree. It's like Ricardo Calafiori. Everyone's like, yeah. Oh, isn't he so good? It's like, you just actually like his hair. Like,
yeah, he's just
not
attractive.
All that, guys.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, that's the midfield sorted. We've done our defence. We're very happy with that. Mr. McIntosh, I will let you pick the front line. Who do you think is going to be the front line for Chelsea in this game against Everton to try and break down this really resolute defence?
Yeah, okay, so first off, I don't really think... Oh, this might be a hot take. I think Nkunku's going to be sold in the summer, right? I think most of us...
I don't think that's a hot take. I think it's probably going to go, yeah.
And my hot take around that would be I don't really want to give him that many minutes if he's going to go because it's actually not particularly beneficial and I don't think his price tag's going to dip too much whether he plays or not. I'm happy in the Conference League, but in the Premier League, less so. So I think, you know, Cole will be in that 10 position. But I think the two wide men are going to be the most significant players for Chelsea against Everton, aside from probably Cole Palmer, is Everton's low block is really impressive. And like you say, they've got a lot of clean sheets. But I think someone like Jadon Sancho will be super significant against Everton because essentially the deal around Sancho at his absolute peak was that he's kind of completely impossible to deal with if you're a low block defence because he dribbles in and around you. And that's he kind of breaks that down by dribbling rather than passing. And when you play it in the air, Everton are going to win it because they're a big team. Play it on the ground, they'll throw bodies in the way. But Sancho can move people out of the way with his own movement, his own dribbling. And again, I feel like I'm, you know, being a bit of an Autobot here, but I think it's something, someone will have to find out the exact thing, but it's around 3.5 successful take-ons a game is what he's doing, and around 5.5 progressive carries, which literally puts him in the top 10 to 5% of all attackers in Europe in terms of his take-on and progressive carry numbers. And that is going to be absolutely central, I think, to getting past Everton because we need people that can beat 1, 2, 3 players. And Sancho is that guy. And I love Pedro Neto. If anything, I think his work rate, his tenacity, his passion is magnificent. But I think Madueke on the other side, 4 goals and assists in 4 games, again, putting up what I would say are impressive numbers. And I think we'll get to the end of the season and be quite happy with Nonny, who I think will be aiming for close to double figures across all. I think he's got 5 goals, 3 assists. But again, like, mate, he's in terms of carrying the ball into the box, there's honestly few better in the world. He does it all the time.
Really?
Yeah, I think in terms of how his progressive carries into the box, I think he's in the top 5% in Europe for getting the ball into the box. I can search it if you'd like.
I mean, go ahead. I mean, for me,
he's in the top 2%. He does it 6.68 times a game. So he's doing it pretty regularly. Like, it's...
Eye test wise, it doesn't look like he's doing that, though.
Are you struggling on Madueke, are you?
I really find his demeanour and the way he approaches the game incredibly tiring now.
For me, it's
a case of he disappears for 2 or 3 games and then he'll come back and he'll think he's the best thing in the world again. And he behaves like it. And he's so nonchalant. When he loses the ball, he just turns and walks. When you've now got Cole Palmer having to track back or, you know, someone has to fill in the gaps where he's failing to track back and cover his man. Mm. And realistically, there's only one player in this Chelsea team who I think has enough credit in the bank to be able to do what he's doing, and that's Cole Palmer. Cole Palmer's the only one I'm like, you can just do what you want. I don't care. Like, for me, I just feel not. I just don't appreciate how nonchalant he is on the pitch. It really annoys me. Maybe it's just the way I like my football. You know, I like...
I don't think it's a sort of niche criticism of him. I think his body language and his facial expressions and his attitude typically piss people off. What I will say is, again, if you look at the numbers over his time at Chelsea, he has continually improved on his tackles, his interceptions, his blocks, his clearances, etc. Those sort of metrics that they measure defenders by within the, you know, the Premier League clubs and European clubs. He does consistently do better than that. I think the thing that people don't talk about with Nonny at all, and I think it's actually his biggest failing, is that he doesn't actually like passing the ball. And I think that is the... He's quite a good passer. His accuracy is really quite high. But in terms of his frequency of passing, he passes rarely compared to other players in his position at other teams, right? His map, his output is much lower. I think he tries around 30 a game, which puts him in the bottom half of wingers who pass the ball. His accuracy is very high, but he doesn't pass very much at all. And that, for me, is more of the issue, because I think he would rather swing at a shot and it's a weak, timid shot that kind of bobbles wide or goes at the keeper near post, then lay the ball off. And I think that's where he needs to really step in. Neto's a completely different profile. And actually, tricks and skills aside, I think Neto's maybe a better player. He's certainly a better finisher. But I think against Everton, and with... Is it Ashley Young is their left back? Is he still starting or is it Mikalenko?
Yeah. No, he's still starting.
Yeah, like 70 minutes of Nonny and 30 minutes of Pedro Neto. I mean, it's not a pleasant experience. And actually, sorry, last thing on Nonny. Danny Windsor, who writes with Fasai over on his website, he made a really, really astute point, which was someone like Nonny really benefits from having a manager like Maresca, because what Maresca did with Nonny and what he did with Enzo is drop them when their performance isn't going well. Nonny had a really strong start to the season, then lost his position a bit to Neto and had to compete and comes back in, comes out. Like, same with you, the attitude is a bit of a difficulty because his motivation peaks and troughs, whereas actually if you take him out of the team, he tends to respond quite positively to criticism or being taken out of the team, which I think is a real unique skill and something we should, you know, enjoy about Nonny. But I think he's going to be a player that's never a permanent name on the team sheet, because he's going to come in and out when his form dips. He needs to be taken out to see that his form's dipped, to then come back and perform better, if that makes sense. And that attitude in itself is quite frustrating, but having a manager who's willing to do so, I think is probably overall quite helpful.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. That's fair enough. You have softened my hard exterior for Nonny Madueke slightly. And he's used stats to do it. Shit.
Sorry, man. There's a really good tool that allows you to compare players' data with other players in Europe.
And is it? Is it really?
And the players he compares to are seriously impressive. Like, he's statistically similar to Barcola, Luis Diaz, Saka, Gakpo, Dani Olmo, Elise, Kvaratskhelia, Lookman and Pulisic. Like, that is the kind of the top bracket of wingers at the moment, bar, you know, Vinicius, and who are in a stratospheric level. But like, he's in good company, but I agree that his attitude kind of needs to be marshalled all the time, which is probably similar with Sancho. And I, you know, it's a tough managerial ask. But I think Jackson will start, and I'd like to see Mark Guiu get some minutes.
Oh, Sparky Play-Doh. That's his actual name. Did you know that?
What?
Sparky Play-Doh. I'm making this stick. I'm telling everybody this is his nickname.
Sparky Play-Doh.
Sparky. Yeah, Sparky, because Mark.
Yeah.
And then Guiu, because Play-Doh's Guiu.
I wish there was like an audio tumbleweed that we could just put in there right now.
They probably are put one in anyway, to be honest. Probably I'll just sit there and be like, okay. It's going to stick, all right? He's a future Ballon d'Or winner. He is Chelsea's answer to Jesus, in my opinion.
He's really good, isn't he?
He's so good. He's so good. And he's only 18. He's really raw, so he's got loads of time. I think for me, realistically, we're probably going to see him go on loan next summer. I reckon he'll stay for the Conference League for the rest of the tournament. But look, if Chelsea qualify for the Champions League next season, realistically, he's not going to be ready for that. So, you know, I'd like to see him maybe go on loan and get regular minutes and really...
Where would you send him? Value.
Do you know what? It's the physicality he's got. I'd just send him to the Championship. I know it sounds very basic, but I think that the way that he physically dealt with Shamrock Rovers and the goalpost he fell into,
I think he's just
very old school. He's an old school physical centre forward.
Yeah, he's a hustler. Like, he's a hustler, man.
He's a Spanish Billy Sharp.
Yeah. I said yeah before I even thought about what you said. Yeah, he is, yeah. No, he's not.
Billy Sharp, bit of a Charlie Austin. That's what I like.
Billy
about
Sharp's
him.
Class, though. Legend. Billy Sharp's a legend. But I like the championship shout. Do you know what? You could so... I mean, Chelsea fans, especially of... I don't know your listener demographics, but if you've got some sort of Chelsea heads from the maybe 70s, 80s, early 90s that listen, they won't like this, but he'd probably be quite good somewhere like Leeds, wouldn't he? Who are quite attacking, quite dominant.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple Spanish players there, so the communication might be a little easier. The Championship's a really nice shout, because if he performs there, you can go straight into the Prem, whereas in any other league, it still might take a bit of work. But I think with Guiu, I think now he's in the top 20 all-time Conference League scorers, so that's good. Congratulations to Mark Guiu. I think his European performances will certainly warrant the fact that he will probably get a nicer loan than he would have had he not had the chance to play in the Conference League.
Yeah, I do think so. And I think, yeah, he needs that loan. It'll be a good move for him. But I'd like to see him continue to get minutes. I'm really, really happy with his performances.
Can I add to this? One of the things that really pisses me off about the loan system is, why would you not send players... I know it's hard because clubs might not want them, might not need them. I understand that. But with someone like Mark Guiu, who's a perfect example, and Ethan Ampadu is the prime example of a player that's had his career shafted by loans and is now at Leeds doing quite well. But send players to teams who are sort of the equivalent to Chelsea in their leagues, a la Leeds. Ball dominant, control the game, aggressive, high scoring. That is where we need to see Mark Guiu. If he goes to somewhere like Coventry and they're struggling in the bottom half, you're going to see not the best of him, and that's frustrating because there's a real good player there. I'd rather see him go to a slightly stronger team in a, albeit weaker league, and experience what it's like to play in a dominant team, because he will be coming into one at Chelsea.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important. I think Billy Gilmore's another great example of that, of when he went to Norwich. Now, he's a player who needed to be on the ball and never actually really got it at that Norwich team, because
they're getting absolutely dunked on every game, yeah.
Yeah, well, because they're trying to do what Southampton had done, because, you know, they've dominated it in the Championship. They come up, lo and behold, it's fallen apart.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have to see what happens with that. But Russell Martin got a job quickly when he was now a reporter on Sky, so fair play to him for that. But that is the Echo 11 with Jay McIntosh, who is featured quite heavily with statistics in this show.
Sorry, guys. Can I ask you a question before you wrap the show?
Go on.
Actually, can I ask you two questions?
Oh, bloody hell. Yeah, right, fine.
If we see 2024 as a calendar year,
okay,
what's your favourite Chelsea moment/goal, and who has been your favourite player other than Cole Palmer?
Oh.
Sorry to hijack the question master part of the...
It's actually a very good question. I think for me, it's my favourite moment because of how I experienced it. But I wasn't there and I was gutted. It was a Man United game. So when Cole Palmer got that last minute winner, I was in Italy with my little brother. We'd obviously gone down. My dad was like, screw this, I'm going to bed. Like, we're going to lose this game again. Like, shocking. So he goes to bed and he's like, you guys had to be quiet because you're at my cousin's house. And they didn't want to wake anyone up in case we lost and I got angry or whatever. And it's like, you cannot wake anybody up. You have to stay quiet. Cole Palmer scores that goal. And it's like during that Bundesliga silent watch along.
Yeah.
Me and my little brother were like on the floor.
Falls over,
like,
yeah.
Silent screaming, just like going nuts. So that was probably my favourite moment. In terms of my favourite player, do you know what? It's either Cucurella, it's the arc. That for him that I really like.
Yes.
And I, as you very well know, I just love someone who's a bit of a dick on a football pitch.
Yeah.
And just in life in general, apparently. But it's like that. And this Nicholas Jackson, or as we should correctly pronounce his name, Nicholas Jackson.
Yeah.
But he's, it's probably those two. I like both of them. I think Nico's done a really good job. But obviously, Cole Palmer's the obvious standout.
Yeah.
I don't really do favourite players anymore. You know, it's like, you know.
Over it now, 27.
I'm 27 now. Who needs that?
I'm tiptoeing towards 30. I'm grown up. Don't have favourite players.
Can we not talk about the fact that it's getting really close to 30?
Bro, I'm 28 in 6 months. I'm on my way.
It's so depressing. It's when I had to get my 26 to 30 rail card. That's when it really hit me. I don't know what to do. It's shocking. I miss being 16 to 25. Where did it all go wrong?
Yeah, 100%. If we were X Factor contestants, we'd be in the old category with all the like 6 year olds.
Jay, please shut the fuck up.
Sorry, guys.
Oh my god. We're both Faulkners.
Or Chicos. Yeah. That's exactly what.
Chico.
That's exactly Jesus what's going Christ. On here. Let me add that I think my favourite goal was Palmer's. Caicedo's halfway line goal, and I'd probably give it to Cucurella or Caicedo if I'm not going to give it to Cole Palmer. But Jackson, you are right, has been class.
Yeah, it's been good. It's been good. It's been a good year, and obviously we'll be closing it out after Boxing Day with some other fixtures. But Jay, mate, thank you so much for coming on. It's been great having you. Before you go, though, just so we can have a chat with some other stuff, we're going to head over to the big bald man for his press conference, and we're going to get some of his quotes.
Hi, Chelsea, the top of the league, win on Saturday, albeit a few hours before play. Do you worry other players got? Is there going to be a lot of pressure on them?
No, I don't think so. First of all, because we try to focus on the game, not on the consequence of the game that can be leader for a few hours. So this is the first reason. And then since we start, I'm trying to convince the player not to just to be focused on the game plan, how we can beat them, how we can do the right things, no more than that. So I don't think that... They can have some pressure about the consequence of the win, because first of all you have to win.
You're coming up against Everton on Sunday, and obviously over the years Goodison Park doesn't seem to be a very happy hunting ground for Chelsea. Is this something that you read into?
Very happy, you said.
Not a good record.
No, that means that Chelsea lost many games there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is this something you read into, or is it more or less?
No, it's something that I didn't know, to be honest. I just realized now. But the same thing they asked me after Brentford game, that Brentford, in the last 3 years, they always beat us. Hopefully we can go there and beat them. For sure we're going to will be a tough game. But we're going to try to prepare the game in the best way we can. And the target is always the same, prepare the game to win the game. And then we see. But I think... Everton Stadium is not tough only for Chelsea. I've been there many times. It's tough for any club. But we're going to see.
And injury news? Anyone due back?
Love. Anyway, Joao is back. You see Joao. Romeo probably will struggle to play Sunday, but probably yes, we see. Tomorrow depends. And then the rest is all clear.
Just to go back to Mark Gu, he hasn't played in the Premier League since the first day of the season. Would he be a player in January you might have to look at a loan for, or do you want to keep him there?
No, I think with young players like Mark, like Josh, like Ty, for me, the best thing for them is to be with us because they can understand every day the way we want to play. They can grow, we can teach them how we want them to play. So I think it's better if they stay with us. But depends a little bit also the desire of the players. If in this case Mark, his desire is to get more minutes and to play more, we sit with him and we decide together.
The bald man has spoken. There's been far too many numbers in this show because Jay's been here. We've been extremely emotional about Italian football because Jay fancies anything that's Italian. And it's been very good having you. So, mate, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's genuinely a pleasure to talk about Chelsea with you anytime. So thank you so much for having me. And big up everyone listening.
Yeah, well, guys, if you want to go find more of Jay, obviously make sure you head across the podcast he does with Si. It's a cracking show, to be fair. I enjoy listening to it every so often. Danny pops in with some words of wisdom. It's like ninja wisdom. He's like Master Chief here with some of the stuff he drops.
Very kind. That's very kind to Danny there.
I know. I know it is. But he knows I'm giving that as a backhanded compliment, so that's fine. Because he's old. But aside from that, guys, this has been the Chelsea Echo. If you have enjoyed this, please make sure you give us a 5-star review and give us a share. Share it with your nan, your dog, your sister. If you've got a cousin who lives in an attic that isn't supposed to be there, you know, give them something to listen to.
Turn it up loud in the car.
Yeah, exactly. Turn it up loud in the car. It's like, you could like sing an outro for you now and you can have it really loud and be like, this is Chelsea Echo. Check it out on all podcast platforms. Yeah. I think, is that fair? Did that work? No. All right. See you later, guys. Ta-da.
That's class.